allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Melissa, roll call, please.
Bauman?
Here.
Shoup?
Here.
McNaughton?
Here.
Mablo?
Here.
Needhammer?
Here.
Place?
Here.
Jeff Ross?
Here.
Monica Ross?
Here.
Van Domlin?
We got an email that Carl wasn't going to be here this weekend, so I would need people on him to excuse his absence. Can you make a motion to excuse his absence? Larry? I have a second?
I'll second the motion.
Jeff seconds. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Let's move on to approval minutes of January 16th, 2023.
Shoup?
Aye.
McNaughton?
Aye.
Mablo?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Place?
Aye.
Jeff Ross?
Aye.
Monica Ross?
Aye.
Bauman?
Aye.
Cool. Let's move on to hearing citizens present on non-agenda items. Okay. Reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. Scott?
Nothing tonight.
Nothing tonight. There is no unfinished business. Let's move right along to new business. The LIAA shoreline recommendations.
So as the City Commission or Planning Commission may recall, back in July we got a visit from Representative Leah and Tipper Met and going over the shoreline recommendations that were made back in 2016. Updating us that and then moving forward with this project. So they got some input back from the Planning Commission. They went back to their teams and developed some additional materials for you to review tonight. We have guests here from Leah, I believe it's Barry Hicks, and from Kevin Met, Jennifer. Do you hear us okay? Why don't you unmute yourselves? You can hear.
Yes. I can hear you fine.
Yeah, I couldn't unmute myself.
Oh, yeah. All right. We're all good. So I guess I would turn it over to you folks to take away with your presentation. Do you need to share a screen or anything like that? Or?
Yeah, I do need to share a screen, yes.
Okay. I'm not quite sure how to give you that authority, but I do have the presentation packet. It would be all right if I just shared my screen and went through it as you spoke.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay.
I can see it at least. I just need to know where we are.
All right, can you see it?
Yes.
Okay.
Can you hear me okay? I'm having trouble hearing you a little bit.
Yeah, we can hear you fine.
Okay.
Let's see if I can change this orientation.
Yeah, that looks like one of the later slides there.
Okay, so where would you like to start?
Go back up. Should be like an intro further up.
No, that's the end of the slide.
Yeah, or the packet maybe backwards.
I think you're missing a few slides at the beginning.
Are these what you're talking about?
No.
No, this is all we received.
Some of the later ones may be the dated aerials. Would that be it?
The slides that it looks like it's missing, I need some air photos.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, we got those are later in the.
These. Here?
Those are looking like. Yeah, there it is.
This is
the beginning right
at.
There.
Okay. All right. Hand that over.
Sorry. No problem. Perfect. I'll do my best answering questions as we go along. And so, yeah, thank you for the introduction. And yes, we were there last fall, kind of a follow-up with what we were talking about at the time, which was the vision for Lake Charlevoix and all the communities around there. On the first slide here, you'll see the all the partners involved, the Lake Charlevoix Association, with you in person, Tom Darton, the president of LCA. And then there's myself with the Land Information Access Association, or LIA. I'm Barry Hicks, the community planner here. And then also joining us is Jennifer McKay. She's the policy director from Tip of the Mint Watershed Council, and she'll be giving part of this presentation today as well. So we all partnered up. And like I said, the intent was to kind of come up with a vision and some recommendations and thoughts from Lake Charlevoix. We did visit back in the fall 9 of the 10 communities. There's 3 cities and 7 townships that are adjacent or have shoreline on Lake Charlevoix. We did visit all of one of them. I believe Marion was the only one we didn't make it to for scheduling conflict reasons. But we were able to make almost everybody and to hear from all planning commissions and feedback also from some of the public about what they liked about Lake Charlevoix and what their thoughts were going forward in the next 5, 10, 20, even 50 years from now, what some of the challenges are you're facing today, all kinds of different things. We're going to go through all that a little later in the presentation here. The intent of this is to kind of walk through what we heard from Boynton City, as well as all your neighbors around the lake, some specific recommendations and thoughts we had regarding what might be able to be done within Boynton City, as well as kind of the overall vision for the lake. This is kind of a follow-up, I think it was said earlier, but maybe the audio is a little garbled, I didn't quite hear it right, so just in case. This is a follow-up from 2016 shoreline zoning study that was done, going around the lake and kind of looking at all the different policies and protections and things that were in place at the time. And we're trying to keep continuing those efforts and getting things moving again. We do want this to be interactive, so please feel free to ask questions as we go. I may pause here and there just to give opportunities for everyone to chime in and speak. So I don't want you to think this isn't like going to a lecture at school. So please feel free to talk to us. And if I can't hear you, either I'm sure Jennifer or Tom there will hopefully be able to decipher what you said as well, maybe chime in. So last time we kind of discussed shoreline hardening, noticing some of the progress that may have been made or best practices. And we're going to kind of recap some of that. But to kick things off, I thought it might be interesting. This is sort of if I were looking through these slides myself, you watch these pictures pop one over the other. But we wanted to look at shoreline in Boynton City, kind of just immediately around there, this change. Starting with 1954, an aerial from 1954, then we have another one from 1978, and then the latest one we have right now is from 2010. And you can kind of see the idea was to just note some of the changes of the development that's going on around the shoreline, where you may see hardening or new condos or houses or that sort of thing going in. Really just to paint that picture of how much things have changed since the 1950s up until 2010. We are working on getting some newer aerial footage from, I believe it's 2021. And when we wrap this project up, which will probably be early summer here, we're hoping to have those included as well, just to give one more time frame. So Basically, yeah, that's just to give you an idea of what the whole shoreline looked like. And then the next series of the three photos actually focuses on the northern shoreline. And forget the name. There was a name for this community when it was originally platted. It's now part of Boynton City, and I can't recall what it was. You can kind of see, this is what I felt told of an interesting story, because you go to the next slide, the 1978 slide, you already see a lot of houses already starting to develop along the coastline there, and then as you go forward, you just continue to see it fill in a little bit. And you do end up seeing a lot of that same thing happening all around the lake. Every township and city that we went to, we could point to examples of that. But like I said, sometimes I feel like a picture is worth a thousand words, so it's just easier to kind of show you what had happened since the 1950s. The next slide is talking about the overall... Oh, where are my hands? up a little more. Oh, there it is. This slide is just talking about the vision for Lake Charlevoix. Something that we had heard as we went around to every community generally was everyone has some kind of interest in the long-term protection of Lake Charlevoix for future generations. We list a few items, things here like swimming and boating and fishing, but really, I think the interest was in keeping the lake healthy and keeping in the forefront of our minds on environmental concerns, water quality issues, maintaining protected shoreline, and that's what allows us to do a lot of those things that we love to do in the lake. Another thing that we heard somewhat universally around the lake was about improving ordinances. I know when we visited Boynton City last time, we talked a bit about ordinances. It really can vary a lot from one place to the other. I know Jennifer might get into this a little bit more during her part of the presentation, but basically, it's not a one-size-fits-all necessarily, particularly what we found. Kind of going into this slide actually. One thing to consider, zoning, we put there, zoning is complicated. That's very true because, like I just said, one size doesn't fit all. So, what we noticed in some of your neighboring cities on the lake, like East Jordan and the city of Charlevoix, there were similar issues around most of the shoreline is hardened. It's probably unlikely to revert back without some kind of drastic, massive improvement that maybe, I don't know how realistic it is or not, or even necessary sometimes in the cities, but that's why we kind of thought of the lake as different areas as we went around, for lack of a better way to look at it. If you've ever heard of something like a zoning overlay district, where you take the overlying, you take the underlying zoning regulations and then layer on top of that maybe some additional regulations if there's like an environmentally sensitive feature or something in the area. This is similar to kind of what we're talking about when I say that developing different areas. We have areas that are a little more rural, where there haven't been seawalls installed yet, or fewer of them. The protection of those areas might be present different challenges, as opposed to when we look at, like in Boynton City, we'll talk a little bit about you have more public property that is adjacent to the lake, where there might be different opportunities as opposed to doing it through regulations to, say, individual private property owners, which I might, be more inclined to talk about if we were out like Evangeline Township or Hayes Township or something. It's probably not quite as applicable in this case. There's also some differences too, I know we're going to get into with talking about some things that were brought up last time about like short-term rental septic and water quality and all those things too, that we found a little more ubiquitous throughout the cities. And even though those issues do get brought up in the townships, maybe it's to a lesser degree, just depending on, you know, what part of that township we're talking about. So there's definitely some opportunities to create some uniformity across the lake that we noticed. But there definitely has to be flexibility because there's never going to be one solution for everybody. And not everyone, you know, as we've discovered, is going to want exactly the same thing, of course. And then we'll talk a little more later about non-conforming lots, and that kind of plays into shoreline protection. On the next slide, I think this is where I am going to take a pause just for a moment before I turn it over to Jennifer there for this portion of the conversation and to see if you have any questions or thoughts so far on what's just been presented.
Nothing.
Okay. Alrighty. Well, then I am going to turn this over to Jennifer McKay from Tip of the Mint and put myself on mute for a moment. Take it away, Jennifer. So, I don't know if she can unmute. We may not have permission to unmute herself.
Thank you, I appreciate that, Mary. We just noticed some things specifically the Boyne City raised as concerns and challenges, and this is one of the things we want to make sure that we got correct as we go to finalize the actual final document. That obviously education is vital moving forward. It can't just be all about ordinances and regulation. Education is a vital component that's needed not only for the community members, but also for commission members and contractors. So sort of across the board education on the importance of various techniques for shoreline protection. Also, as noted, the cities are particularly different because they are already developed. We have to make specific recommendations based upon the development that already exists. As Barry mentioned, part of what already exists with that development is the fact that there are already hardened shorelines within the city, both public property and private property, that are just part of the actual infrastructure. Communication and collaboration came up that, you know, you've worked with the cities before on other projects, but working with the city, working with Eagle, that communication and collaboration is going to be essential to ensure the actual protection moving forward. Addressing stormwater, I know it's something that is of interest to the city, and so I think based upon hearing that, we have some recommendations for that. Addressing septic system pollution, and I know it was noted that the Point City does not believe it's actually a city issue, but a county issue, but that it is something that needs to be addressed. And that, you know, there's the opportunity for the city to lead by example. So did we capture sort of your concerns and challenges correctly?
Have you had any property owners interested in having regulations on their own property for, you know, after they're gone for future sale or as they pass away? If you understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are many property owners that, you know, are interested in having the regulations for the long-term benefit of the lake and the fact that it can improve economics. we can go ahead and move forward with the next slide.
Jennifer, I got a question, and this might be for Scott too. And it refers to the septic system. Is now the right time? Is now the right time to ask that question, or
you want to? Yeah, go ahead.
So, I think that going from throughout the city and then out all the way to Advance to the condominium development out there is city sewer, and then going all the way out to Glenwood Beach. So past both city limits around the perimeter of the lake, and then all downtown, and I think including Bay Street. My point is, Scott, is all of that city septic?
City sewer.
City sewer, yeah.
Or city sewer, I mean.
Right, yeah. The sewer extends mostly downtown along the lake shore. You get out towards the airport and some other areas don't have access. Out on M75 South, there's...
Maybe later on we have
that. Yeah, in our capital improvement plan, you have the map. So yeah, we do have a pretty good coverage of the city for sewer services, especially near the lake.
I guess that's my question. So lake frontage, I think we have 100% access to city sewer.
Do we have 100% of the property owners on the sewer?
No.
I think along Lakeshore, there's some that are not yet, but that opportunity's there. Eventually, I'm sure they will transition over.
When we went out to Advance, Larry, there were 25 homes inside the city limits that had the opportunity to hook up, and I don't think they all did.
Okay. How much does it cost?
Does the county work with you? And where I grew up, city sewer became, there came out our way, we lived in the country. And the county made it a rule that if our septic system failed, they would not issue another permit for any kind of remediation on the septic system. You must, at that time, hook up to the sewer that was available.
Yeah, if the sewer is reasonably close, right, mm-hmm. I can't remember how many feet away it has to be for them to require that they do hook up.
So the county, county up here does require that. Yeah. Okay.
Local government staff to have the knowledge to make scientific sure that we have, you know, protection of private property and Lake Charlevoix. And then lastly, we need to educate realtors to provide a realistic description of what can and cannot occur on the property, and asking them to assist in education of the homeowners on the Charlevoix. The second one is to consider banning construction of seawalls. So from an ecological perspective, construction of seawalls should be avoided in favor of other erosion control measures. That the Heart Services basically reflect wave energy, they increase the erosion in the vicinity of the structure. And so it may be best for zoning ordinance standards to discourage the construction of seawalls, but banning them except where warranted by either a hydrological analysis or an engineer's findings. This actually not only protects private property from erosion, but they can also protect Lake Charlevoix from the impacts of the hurricane. Coordination on permitting. You know, you share power with the state and federal government on Lake Charlevoix. So there's a couple things that can assist with that coordination. Making sure to comment on the permit applications that you receive copies of. In addition to doing that, you can also take the opportunity to participate in when a proposed project will potentially violate the local ordinance. So you can comment to EGLE, and they're then not supposed to approve a permit. And I've already talked to EGLE. The second thing is getting them to update the Planning Commission meetings, Board of Trustees meetings, the district permitting staff from EGLE has agreed to come to Boyne City to further understand and explain the coordination that can happen between the state and Boyne City. So if you were interested in that, I can gladly help facilitate that. Lastly, referring all permits to be obtained prior. So you can make it part of your local ordinance that all of the relevant permits are received prior to permit approval. You can do it either conditionally or actually requiring permit approval before you actually approve anything. And once the sequence where the permits has been established and the community clickers can create and use a checklist sort of guide the document that workflow. Next is a
Hold on just 1 minute, Jennifer.
The Charlevoix Watershed Plan.
Jennifer, I've got a question.
So the Lake Charlevoix Advisory Committee was created to implement watershed management plan steps. And it's, in the past decade, it's actually been one of the most active watershed groups that we have. And so it's a partnership that strengthens sort of everyone around Lake Charlevoix, the Lake Charlevoix Association, the Conservation District, Little Traverse Bay Band of Dawson Indians, local governments, friends group, obviously the Watershed Council, and it's really there for addressing issues and pollution on Lake Charlevoix.
Jennifer, you had a question?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I've been involved somewhat with the Lake Charlevoix Association and heard some of these concerns in these meetings. This banning construction of seawalls, I think, is going to be the most difficult thing for the city to do. There's a few things going on. First here, my impression, correct me if I'm wrong, is that EGLE permits seawalls long before it would ever come before a planning commission, especially the existing homes.
The planning commission
planning commission would not necessarily be reviewing existing home seawalls. So Eagle's going to be permitting those without our consent. My understanding is they do, a lot of homeowners go to Eagle long before they'd be going to the planning commission, so it's almost out of our hands. Okay? That's number one. Number two, I think you've said it first as a developed city. The only way you can get away without a seawall is if you have a sufficient depth of lot to provide for a certain amount of variation of high water to low water depths. With Boyne City being so developed, and it's developed in such a way that the roads were set in here, if you look at some of these overlays, the roads were in place in the city probably in the close to the 50s or 60s. That was established, the distance from the road to the shoreline established a lot depth, especially if you talk about Glenwood Beach and Lower Lake Street. So in order to get a proper setback to ban construction of seawalls, I think every lot owner in Boyne City could claim hardship that they don't have sufficient depth to build a house from the high water. I appreciate that you say it's difficult in a developed city, and you're absolutely correct. I don't think we could ban construction of seawalls with the lot depth and the road location.
Frank, what we're talking about there are vertical sheet pile seawalls.
Okay.
There are other ways to engineer, even in short-fetched situations, essentially something that's got more of a slope on it and more of an irregular surface to it, so that it's not bouncing back uniformly the engine energy that comes into it. And there are, without a lot of detail, there are a lot of options that are out there that are people, engineering folks, are currently working on. My son works for the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative as an engineer, and they're doing designs. City of Buffalo, some St. Joe's. I mean, there are options that are out there, and if the rule is we're not going to have any more of these vertical sheet pile seawalls, that's going to prompt people to, to get into some of these other areas that are being explored. There is precedent to do that. So what we're talking about here is just the vertical sheet pile seawalls are really destructive. So we're looking for a way we understand that if you got a short throw between the road and there are all kinds of, and that's part of what we've learned with all these interviews, is that there's a lot of variety around the lake, and our regulations are they're pretty crude in many ways. But anyway, that's what we're concerned about, is the vertical sheet pile seawalls.
Okay, well, thank you for the definition. I mean, seawalls can be lumped into a kind of like an overall term for all the shore hardening, but this is a specific type.
Right.
Being the
vertical.
Vertical.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. And I should note that Eagle is actually moving away from permitting those vertical seawalls. They're allowing, at this point, a home to only repair it one more time. And then at that point, you do have to start sort of moving towards these newer projects that are more ecologically preferable.
Jennifer, could you touch on the
yes.
question that Larry had about the Planning Commission getting into the permitting process of Eagle, and how would that work?
So anytime somebody applies for an application, you should receive a copy of the permit application. And you have the ability to provide comments to Eagle. And you're, because you're a local government, your comments have a lot of weight on what, you know, what can and cannot be done, especially if it's a violation of one of your local ordinances.
But if our ordinances require some kind of planning commission approval and that permit goes to Eagle, how would they know that it needs to go back to us for that review and approval prior to them signing off on that permit?
Well, that's where you would have to be engaged in the review process and actually send comments.
Send comments, so letting them know that...
On behalf of you, to the Mendham Watershed Council, I review every single permit application that comes in for our four county service area.
So we would just let them know that we need to...
So you would just have to say, this is, you know, we have in our ordinance that
to regulate the activity.
We have to sign off on any project.
Okay.
Or it violates our ordinance. And this is also where, you know, I can assist in bringing in the the perimeter for Eagle. Just sort of talk through how they can make it work more holistically and more efficiently with you.
All right, just a quick question just to go along with that. So what you're saying is that Eagle should already be sending us?
And we get those.
We do get those.
We do get those.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just wanted to make sure that, you know, how do we get into their process? You know,
right.
We can comment, but, you know, how do they know that we have regulations prior to them signing off on?
All right. Now we can make it so that way, if development is happening on the water, that they have to get approval from the planning commission. Is that correct? Or do we have to come up with a new district that encompasses all of the water?
Well, the city already has a waterfront overlay district in section 21-19 of the ordinance. It identifies all Lake Charlevoix, all lakes and streams within, identify specifically Point River, Mud Lake, which is also Forest Lake. And those regulations were put in place probably 20 years ago. But those regulations specifically look at density and development. It doesn't talk anything about seawalls or anything like that. So it would probably be logically the best to look at that section and amend it, as opposed to creating any kind of new overlay.
And that was what I was just going to ask, if we could use that as where we would add amendments to, where we would have more of...
That would make the most sense to me.
Okay.
And there's a distinction between the planning commission's role and the zoning administrator's role in this kind of thing, too. So when a permit application goes in, that's a zoning administrator job to look at that and say, does this fit with our ordinance or not? And then that information, the planning commission's task, as I understand it, more is to design ordinances. You're not directly involved in much as enforcement and implementation.
Well, they are charged with site plan review and development plan.
Right.
And this would fall right under that. Some ordinances do have requirements for any waterfront development to be reviewed by the planning commission. Mm-hmm. So that would be an administrative role for this planning commission in that case.
Yeah, there are certain things within the ordinance that we have to have review on. And there are some that are just handled by administration because they're just, we don't really need to. But this would be a special circumstance.
It would be the discretion of the planning commission and ultimately the city commission if they wanted to develop that ordinance and who to give that authority to.
Exactly.
Okay. I mean, one of the gaps, and we haven't figured out how to close this yet, but is, you know, there should be one planning process where, you know, that what happens on the dry side and the wet side, then the state, the feds, and the city or township are all part of the same conversation. And we need to figure out a way to make that happen. And we're cogitating on that. It's one of the needs that has emerged in this process. And we have some ideas about that, but that it's not fair to homeowners to make them go through two separate processes, and you end up in situations where people are sometimes getting conflicting information. I mean, it just, for everybody's sake, it would be much more efficient to do this as a coordinated process. And as I said, we've identified that as a need. The people that, now that things are back to a little bit more normal in Eagle, we've got better dialogue with them, and we're working on that.
Okay, I think we're done, Jennifer. You can continue.
Great. So another recommendation is, I guess, kind of for us or ourselves, is, you know, for 6 years we had the annual Charles Boyd County Planners Forum that was held, educational opportunity for elected and appointed planning officials within Charles Boyd County, you know, to learn about the latest issues affecting the county and share information, coordinate against amongst the various jurisdictions. Those were obviously paused during COVID. And so at this point, trying to really rebuild those relationships and get back to coordinating effectively and efficiently, not just on shoreline protection, but other issues. So reinvigorating those planner forms. Using bombs and predetermined fines, you can ensure conditions for shoreline protection are met, specifically with respect to sort of green belts, which I'll get to in a minute, by requiring self-reporting or independent inspections using bonding or, you know, specific predetermined fines. For example, in Wisconsin, they have shoreline ordinance that has included a fine of $10,000 per unmarked tree that's damaged on shoreline property. Improving permit application. Many zoning ordinances are written in a manner that has shoreline protection provisions in sort of different sections, and it makes it difficult for property owners to fully understand exactly what requirements are needed. So, in an effort to simplify the process for homeowners and hopefully ensure compliance, you know, put a checklist of all shoreline protection requirements along with a drawing that can be implemented as part of the permitting process. So, I'm just trying to make it easier on the homeowners so they know exactly what's required. And then the last thing for the lakewide recommendations is to attend trainings. And so that's really, there's so many opportunities that exist that, you know, or that can be made available for the planning commission, zoning administrators, and other local government officials to assist with permit applications, you know, the shoreline ecology. So before I move on to the next slide and get into the additional considerations, and that's off on these.
No, I think we're ready to move on.
Okay. Again, the following additional options will require more conversation and collaboration or third parties. So bear in mind the Getty, you know, we already have an overlay district. So you know what they are. The second one was discussed a lot about control of domain county zoning, because it has police, you know, police departments and legal team and other resources that would formally enforce ordinances for the entire county. Obviously, this would, you know, have to have all of the municipalities adopt one ordinance contract with the county for enforcement services. Similarly to that, another option would be for all the municipalities to agree upon a third party to contract for review and enforcement. This was done about, I guess, 25 years ago around Lake Charlevoix. So this has occurred previously, but it no longer exists due to change the leadership over the jurisdictions over the year. Ordinary high watermark interpretation, that came up a lot where, you know, what level should the ordinary watermark be set at? We obviously know in 2020, we had water levels that were extremely high, and should the ordinary high watermark be adjusted, getting anticipated higher water levels, threats posed by storms due to climate change? And so it might be required to get a legal analysis on the best way to regulate shoreline properties and based upon the ordinary high watermark. And the last one would be regulations for short-term rentals and suffix. And this has come up because obviously, you know, short-term rentals have increased significantly, and most of them are all along the water. And, you know, you guys might be different in Boyne City with the sewer system, but there are many or subject systems for short-term rentals that are significantly used over capacity. And so adjusting them via the short-term rental ordinance is a way to ensure that subject systems are not harming the water resources. Any thoughts on those?
No.
The recommendation for Boyne City. It was a recommendation to have formal planning commission site review for all the waterfront uses. I know you have them for some, but not every single one. And so this is just to ensure you have detailed information, obviously more precise documentation on all development and proposed projects adjacent to the lake. Obviously, we already talked about banning construction of seawalls. The next two are with respect to green belts. And so obviously, you know, green belts help protect the water quality of the lake. They reduce shoreline erosion, they slow stormwater runoff rates, they filter nutrients before the water, stormwater reaches the lake. The native plants included in a greenbelt generally require less maintenance because they're adapted to local conditions. Elimination of a lawn generally reduces the amount of herbicides or fertilizers, pesticides that can be put close to the lake. And then, so it's recommended that particularly for all public waterfront properties within the city, that you lead by example and you have a minimum greenbelt requirement. Obviously, a 50-foot greenbelt requirement would not work within city limits. And so, you know, working with staff at the Watershed Council to sort of come up with what would be ideal. Sort of recommended that waterfront properties larger than 100 feet would require a minimum 30-foot greenbelt that covers 75% of the shoreline, so the length of the shoreline, and that you know, use the specific deep-rooted plants. And then for properties that are less than 100 feet, obviously, you know, you're going to have to scale back by percentage. And then, obviously, for individual homeowner properties, you can't go back and, you know, retroactively apply a green belt or buffer standard to existing properties. However, when it's a newly developed property or a renovated property, you can apply the standard. And so, you know, again, it would be a recommendation for, again, 75% of the frontage, and extending, if possible, 20 feet in depth. But again, it will have to depend upon the depth of the lot in question. And the green belt buffer should be no less than a depth of 5 feet. And then, and then consider the perimeter that could go into a green belt ordinance. So requiring native vegetation, prohibiting the use of pesticides, herbicides, fertilizers, prohibition of a lawn, prohibition of beach sanding, limiting pathways and structures in the green belts, and you know, requiring that planting to be spaced to basically complete that ground cover within 2 years. We talked about septic, but it doesn't sound like he does need the septic ordinance. And then the last one is really stormwater management. And it's really looking at installing trash capture technologies in the stormwater system that you have. And so this would really, really be to address sort of the release and debris of, you know, trash, plastic from the stormwater system. These technologies can be deployed at different locations. So it could be, you know, at the inlet, inline, at the outlets. There's a lot of different technologies that are available, but they can be really effective and efficient in protecting waterways. And we have a number of examples that can go in the final report.
Jennifer, do you know if there's any state grants towards projects like that?
There is projects for green infrastructure. I'm not sure if this would fall under green infrastructure because it's addressing stormwater management and keeping plastic and debris out. I'll have to look more into that and see if, because the ultimate end game is the same. I'll have to look into that.
Thank you.
Scott, we have 3 points where stormwater exits out of the Lake Charlevoix, am I correct?
Three?
I would say there's more.
More?
Yeah.
I'm thinking the one at Sunset Park is filtered. That's a filter system under there, correct?
Yes.
How about the one coming down, let's see, Lower Lakeshore Drive at the Little City Beach there?
Lower Lake Street?
Lower Lake Street.
I'm not sure what that infrastructure is comprised of.
It seems
DPW director would be better able to answer.
How about Charlevoix Street?
I don't know. I don't know exactly. I think it's that the word direct all that.
There doesn't seem, I used the beach at Lower Lake Street. There doesn't seem to be any problem with trash going through the storm system there.
It seems like up the hill there.
There's that big retaining pond.
Retaining pond. I think that's a filter system.
Yeah, I think so.
I was wondering how we grade on that.
I don't know. I think it takes some specific analysis of each outlet and identify what improvements can be made. I don't have that available right now.
Okay.
Keep continuing.
Any other, this is the recommendations at the time. Any other thoughts? Did you miss anything big?
No, this is exactly what we were asking for.
Great. I'd like to hear that.
Yeah.
You can go to the next slide. Barry will probably need to be unmuted. And
okay, there we go. Thank you. Yeah, I was muted there. Before I start on the last slide, I think I heard something about grants for the stormwater trash capture technology. I'm not 100% certain here, but just a thought that crossed my mind when that was asked was working, I'm sure you work with the county right now on any roads that like receive Act 54 funding or anything like that, MDOT funding that may come down or county roads. Sometimes there's some oddball things you can ask for as you go through that process is street repairs, repavings, and things like that happen. I know they do streetscapes where in some of the communities in the southern part of the state, they've been able to incorporate things like, what do you call them, file swales or rain gardens. That's one of the words I'm looking for. Different things like that. So they'll do creative stuff. Just something to think about if you're working on it. People don't always think of roads when they think of that, but road funding actually can tie into some of that. I just wanted to thank everybody for joining us tonight. For having us at the Planning Commission, we do have some follow-up we're looking forward to providing to you after we have the chance to visit with the rest of the communities around the lake. At the moment, we're scheduled kind of going through the end of March, and depending on how big, potentially some rescheduling goes with a couple communities, we might go into April, but we'll see. But when we wrap this up, the goal will be to have all these thoughts that we've collected from everyone with some of these specific recommendations for each community like we went through tonight, and then also to provide some maps, things of that nature that may show different impacts that water level rising may have on the lake over time, climate change factors, and a lot of good stuff like that. Another thing I just briefly wanted to touch on was, I know we've had a little conversation already with some other folks about online permitting to streamline processes like the Eagle, and local requirements and stuff like that. It might be easier too for anyone looking to get a permit, whether it's a homeowner or a contractor or a realtor or whoever. So we start thinking, kind of brainstorming some ideas now about what that might look like too. I know that's something Leah has the capacity to potentially help with at a later time once we wrap all this up. But hopefully we'll have a little bit more for that when we come back with the final report. And then continue going into, I know, the fall. Jennifer mentioned a little bit about getting a planners forum back together. So we have more conversation continuing around the lake and getting everybody re-engaged in that process. I was not involved with it myself before, but from what I understand, that was something that was going on and it kind of dwindled with COVID and just never really got back together. So hopefully we can reinvigorate that. So that's kind of where we're at, where we're heading with all of this. So you'll eventually get some kind of report out from us a little later this year, once we've gone out in the communities. Thanks again for having all of us. I want to see now if there's anything else from Jennifer or Tom that I've missed, and then any final thoughts from the commission.
I've got one thought here. this clarification for me on the seawall versus other type of shoreline protection, I think is very interesting and very important. So, as well as the definition of a green belt. So, would it make sense, and I'm looking for other commissioner feedback, would it make sense to have example ordinance verbiage that would have a definition of what would be
right.
What would be applicable as far as this is what is desired, this is what's prohibited.
Right. And type of thing. And I'm right there with you, Larry, but I think that at this point, we probably need to take all this information that we have,
right.
Ask Scott to look at the ordinance and see what can be done with these parameters,
right.
And then we have on the schedule for discussion of those
okay.
things.
Well, I think once they come back with their final report, it would be an opportunity to look at that in depth, and then begin those discussions about, okay, how do we implement those regulations and looking at specific
right.
language and examples and that.
But what I'm saying is within the report from Lake Star Letter Association may be some definitions mm-hmm. that we can use.
Right.
Some example language.
They're out there. And you're right, I mean, you know, a green belt can be grass all the way down to the water, and that's not what we're talking about. So,
correct.
Yeah.
Well, and then also possibly, you had said Wisconsin, I believe, and some other places where you saw ordinances that fit anything of that type of nature would be very helpful for us to see what other people are doing as well. So that way we have a little bit of direction.
I think that's a fantastic suggestion. Thank you.
Yeah, if I can just a quick closing comment, as one who's been going live to all these gatherings, I just want to say that from the Lakes Association, we're getting a deep appreciation about how, you know, we're working on the same problems. You know, we have the same concern protecting the lake. We've got a lot of the same problems in terms of development pressure. But, you know, the three cities have very different waterfronts, and the tools available are very different depending on townships or cities. And, you know, the cities, you've got a responsibility to provide access, you know, to the general public, whereas private property in the townships, that's not a concern. So as we're putting together ideas, you know, we need to keep both pictures in mind, and we'll appreciate having your continued reminders to us that we have to pay attention to the problems as well.
Okay.
Our bubblers, I believe we talked about bubblers one time, but I didn't hear about any of our discussion here as far as protecting the shoreline. You know, the ice bubblers around the lake. I didn't know if you guys were trying to implement or suggest ordinances on those as well.
We're trying to tailor our recommendations to the specific entities.
Okay.
Jim, you had a question?
How is the water quality of Lake Charlevoix? Is anybody measuring that and doing updates every year? How are we doing? That's the goal of all
actually
this.
The tip of the mitt has a water monitoring, quality monitoring program. I actually do that for the West Coast. And it's at least twice, but three or four times a month. The tribe is also doing samplings, I think, a little bit less frequently and a little bit more detailed. What I'm doing is taking water, you know, temperatures and collecting chlorophyll from the water column. But the answer to the lake is, in terms of water quality, has stayed quite, you know, it's in good shape. Not a lot of life in it. But, it, you know, so if you're a fisher person, you may be complaining, but, at the moment, we're doing okay. And particularly when you consider that it was clear cut 150 years ago,
that would be good to report every now and then, you know, just so the public knows that.
Yeah. Anything else?
Thank you for your hard work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Good night.
Thank you very much for doing that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. At this time, we'll move on to the 2023 to 2028 capital improvement review. You may need to turn it sideways again. Scott?
Yep.
I got just a quick question. Why was the planning commission approached about this rather than the city commission?
I think that was their strategy to go to all the planning commissions around the lake.
Okay.
And then probably move that.
I mean, I know that was part of their plan, but there were a lot of parts that we really can't implement as the planning commission.
Exactly. It would take the city commission to ultimately, you know, adopt.
Especially adopting or changing city property to lead by example, so to speak.
Right.
Okay.
All right. I kind of messed my stuff up here, so I'm going to get this thing done again. So you provided the. Capital improvement plan. You may not notice much change in the last one that we reviewed last year. Currently, as a city, we don't have a DPW director, we don't have a wastewater director, we don't have a parks director, we don't have a harbor master. Last week, we got a Main Street director. So, a lot of the input on projects has been limited in regards to the capital improvement.
Yeah, I knew last year it was a similar situation.
Yeah, so the project list was not extended in an additional year as it usually typically is, so I just included all of the projects from the last capital improvement plan. There probably will be some adjustments to this, as I know the police department will probably look at some additional requests for vehicles and equipment, as well as the fire department and EMS. In regards to infrastructure projects, I don't see a lot of futuristic planning going on that far down the line. You know, I think we'll probably concentrate on the projects as they're listed in the plan right now, until we can get, you know, those personnel on board to help us, you know, take a deeper dive in developing, you know, those kinds of. So as part of the requirement of the planning commission, you are required to review the capital improvement plan annually and make a recommendation to the city commission. So that's why it's in front of you tonight.
Because we don't have all the people in place to help direct.
Well, and I think the hazy part goes out, you know,
know, that 60 year or so.
Absolutely.
So the next couple of years, you know, I think, you know, we'll be fine, but once we get people on board, we're going to have to do some really good, looking at the future and what projects need to be done and incorporate into the plan.
Sure. I'm looking at the 22, 23, 24,
okay?
It seems to indicate, first of all, that Avalanche Phase 2 and 3 are Phase 2 is 22, 23. Does that mean that's coming up, or that it's completed? And then 24 is going to be like Phase 3 improvements at Avalanche.
Well, part of those are grant dependent, and I don't think any grants have been submitted for Avalanche, so those probably would not happen.
Okay. They seem to be out of general.
Let me see where it is. I don't know where that project would fall in regards to the parks budget. I know they have some, you know, the open space is kind of a priority with the receiving the grant for that and coming up with the matching funds, and the estimates kind of exceeded, you know, the originally quoted dollars, so they'll probably have to come up with some additional money to implement that grant.
I have a question on 22-23, the kayak launch. Are they going to put that right down by the marina, or is that going to go... It would seem to make more sense that it would go at the open space, where it's not conflicting with boat traffic.
I know Commissioner Conklin's on the Park and Rec Board. Is there any discussion?
There's a discussion about the kayak.
Putting it down here.
Yeah, I think there is one down here at the small boat launch. You know, there's a kayak right there.
Because that seems like that would just add to congestion at a spot that's already congested. And it isn't like you can take the kayak under the bridge. If they could go on it from the river out there, then it would make more sense. But otherwise, it would seem like it would make more sense at the open space.
Mm-hmm. Well, people do go under that bridge all the time, and that boat launch is very well utilized by the kayakers. And it makes sense to have them both, just because you really don't want all those kayakers from the river going through and around.
Right, that's why I'm saying down here would make more sense.
No, they're coming down the river. They're not across, they're not paddling.
But can they get under the tubes?
Right here.
Oh, I thought the tubes, the water level was too high for them to get under the tubes.
2 years ago,
they walk out.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. They're short people.
Short people. Skinny people.
Yeah, sure. Or people that go over backwards.
Can I have a couple of questions on the 22-24 I wasn't familiar with? Replace the place of the structure at Veterans Park, are you talking about the wooden floor structure? Do you know where that got started?
That would have been Mr. Boss that put that in there, and I don't know exactly.
And then there was,
seemed to mean what it would indicate, but I'm not
and
sure.
And then there was something about parking improvements down here in Veterans Park?
Yeah, I remember.
Is that part of the baseball project?
No, that would be a separate project, and just going to improve that gravel parking area.
And then who would make the estimate on the sidewalk? It's just got $12,000 for sidewalk repair citywide. Is that something that comes from the DPW?
Yeah, it would be put there, probably their annual kind of sidewalk.
I think it's the same every year if you look at that. Not very
and
much.
And I think past practices that would, you know, annually review and determine where that's going to be spread out.
Is there a way to get things off the ground? Is there a way to delete things off the plan?
Yeah. Typically when I distribute the plans to all the parking heads, I get that feedback.
Just to see if they're paying attention.
Yeah, especially if they're not there. It's
I'm just, I'm curious about 2324, design and construct pedestrian walkway along the waterfront from the marina to Honeywell property. Oh, I was reading it wrong. I was thinking it was from the marina all the way to the open space. I was going to ask what that was like, but because Honeywell would be private property, but it's ending at Honeywell.
Well, there was talk about doing it in front of Honeywell. Along I don't know where those discussions went, but that was, kind of a goal to have that connection.
Yeah, it would be nice. But it's private property, and that's
right. Right, you'd have to have cooperation from Honeywell, obviously.
Yeah.
Still,
it'd be wonderful if we could do it.
I knew that when we were talking about the connecting all the bike paths, that would be
wonderful. Yeah, it would be wonderful if they could do it. Is that going to be a problem with the the seawall construction at the waterfront?
It could be.
It seemed it would be a competing interest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Scott, with the road system, I always like looking at this just because it's kind of interesting. When will the roads get to be rated again?
Well, typically they do that in the spring of the year. I'm not sure if we would have a representative. There's usually a MDOT person, a county person, and a city person, and somebody like from Network as well. Form a team and do them all.
Okay.
And so if we don't have somebody representing the city, I'm not sure
But this says it hasn't been done since 2019.
Right. 2020 didn't do it with COVID, and so 22 we didn't have a person, so lost employees between now and then. So
yeah.
It would be nice to get it updated, but
no, just curious about the process.
Now, as far as department heads within the city, we're still missing DPW and
water, wastewater.
Parks and Rec
is usually under the DPW.
So it's a little bit difficult to get feedback.
Yes, it's very difficult to get feedback.
Oh.
Yes.
I talked with Scott before the meeting started that I had another application. Is that anything you might be excused for?
Absolutely.
Okay. Do we have to vote on it?
No, Nicole.
I wasn't sure. Before I leave.
Oh, and in the future, if you do have to leave early, can you please let us know at the beginning of the meeting? You did. Because if we have anything on the agenda that we need votes for, I'd change the order of things that we have got a chance to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Perfect.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So if we don't have any recommendations for this, then there's really nothing to do, correct?
If you can make a recommendation to have the city commission adopt the capital improvement plan as presented.
Okay.
I just have one question. What are they trying to do it out? What are the improvements that are going to cost almost $300,000?
Well, there was a planning done that had a number of improvements, the sledding hill, a new facility, a lot of improvements. That plan should be online.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, it was a pretty extensive planning process. A lot of
it was part of Parks and Rec conversations weren't recently had a few years ago with the open space project.
Yeah.
Those two things were kind of colliding together. Well, not colliding.
we're
coinciding at the same time.
Yeah, Beckett Rader did the whole plan.
Yeah, it's okay. Cool.
And
thank you.
Which is a really nice
really cool.
I personally would be hesitant to provide any recommendations to city commission without other department input.
That's kind of how I feel.
Okay.
Thanks, Scott. Is there any other input? Okay. Let's move on to staff report, Scott.
The short-term rental ordinance has been in effect for a couple of months now. It requires a licensing requirement, and we have 105 licenses so far. There's probably 157 that have been identified as currently operating. 6.5 of those are in the traditional residential district. There's about 97 that were identified in that district, 10 of which were accessory dwelling units. The city commission discussed a cap last Tuesday with the second one in that district. They ultimately decided they could not come to an agreement on what a cap should be. So I guess we will operate as it is now and probably review next year and see where we stand with that. The citizen planner that I talked about at the last month looks like it's going to be moving forward. MSU Extension puts it on, and it's a 6-week training course that's 3 hours a night, 1 day a week. They're putting their marketing materials together right now, and once we get those, we'll get them out in the community, and anybody wants to participate, there's a cost, $250. If any planning commissioners want to participate, you know, the city will pay that tuition, but anybody else, you know, they're going to be on there. So it is pretty extensive, it is quite a commitment, so it's understandable that, you know, it's like people.
Personally, I just want to see some actual dates, because I've got a whole bunch of stuff going on in the morning.
It starts April 6th, it'll be every Thursday up until May 18th. That week prior to that, May 18th, will be no class on that day. So it'll be like 5 in a row, 2 weeks off, and then that last one is easy.
So. This is for, excuse me.
It's a citizen planner program, and they go over a variety of planning and zoning kind of topics. Their marketing materials kind of has class descriptions on each series, so once they finalize that, they'll distribute it to everybody, and you know, you can take a look at it and see if it interests you, just let me know.
If somebody's interested in one or two nights, or do you have to do all of them?
Well, if you want to get the citizen planner designation, or you know, certificate, whatever they provide for that, you're going to have to do all 6. But if you want to do one or two and still pay the $250, you know, that's your choice.
Okay. Anything else, Scott?
That's all I have. Okay.
Do the order. How's everybody holding up?
I think everybody knows the city commission elections are held this year. The petition deadline is April 25th, and I think that it typically, hopefully, that the Planning Commission is a good sort of farm team for the City Commission. So I just wanted to sort of mention that and hope that some of you might think about doing that. I'm not sure if the two incumbents will run again. They may be undecided, but yeah, whatever. It's just I think that people in this room have experience with local government issues more than Joe Q Citizen, and I just wanted to mention that and encourage you all to give that a think.
Appreciate that, Jim.
So is that his campaign speech to throw? <me out? laughs>
Yes, my campaign speech is somebody else please step forward.
Oh, I don't
want to
finish. Is there anything else?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
I have a motion to adjourn. Can I have Larry has seconded? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?